are realists in the room. I knew there would be.
Our brain,
kind of the machine, the computer that it is, takes in this data, and we have to sort through it, and we have to make sense of it. And we do it pretty quickly. This word apophenia is kind of a word that describes... Yeah.
Sorry. Given that we're videotaping,
take it with me? Really?
Yeah.
The over-projecting's not going to work? I'll try to stand here, then.
Okay.
I'll try really hard. Oh, that's going to be tough. I walk in the aisles and things like that. All right. Even if we have completely random data sets shoved at us, our brains want to make sense of them, right? We want to organize it. We want to systemize it. We want to turn it into a symbol of some sort so that we can understand what it is. What's the first thing you see there? A face, a cardboard box, another image file. I think this is a good trait to have, right? For little kids, this is pretty important. I think seeing a face, if you're a baby, you're getting the stream of data you've never processed before. Seeing a face is pretty important. We've got a good shot that that face is going to give you food somehow, right? How about that one?
Baby with a mustache.
This is supposedly, this is an aerial shot of a farm field in Hungary somewhere. I looked at it upside down for a little bit, and I thought it looked like a donkey, but there it is. That's me. There's no apophenia in that one. That's my face. I should tell you who I am. My name's Will Lindsay. I'm an educator. I'm a media artist. Most of my work revolves around how we use technology, how it changes society and culture, how our culture and society changes technology. Beyond that, I consider myself a hacker. I use that version of the word, meaning I like to take things apart and put them back together the wrong way and use them for something else. I do a little bit of electronics. I do some DIY and open source electronics online. And there may be a couple of you out here, but I'm a kind of avid shortwave radio guy, too, right? A couple? Okay. For the non-shortwave people, I'm fairly interested in this idea of what we call DXing, which means listening for a really weak signal that's probably too far away for the radio technology to carry it very well. I've always been interested in that ever since I was a little kid. Accidentally hearing Cuba jumble in over my father's classic rock station or something. One of the things that I got interested in is kind of this portability. And one of the things that happens in technology when we talk about the history of technology is as the technologies, I won't say radio is about to die, but some people feel that way, as technologies kind of get at the end of their curve of acceptance, one of the things that happens to them is they get really cheap, right? So if you think about the wristwatch, anybody in here, how many people wearing a wristwatch in the room? Yeah, this is an odd crowd. Wow. A lot of wristwatches in here. Cell phone comes around. Everyone checks what time it is on their cell phone. People are wearing less wristwatches. What happens to the wristwatch market? Two things happen to it. One, people start collecting really, really expensive wristwatches and sometimes old ones. And then you can get one in a gumball machine for 50 cents, right? So the manufacturing gets really cheap. The market gets oversaturated. This is starting to happen with radio right now. And I started taking an interest in these cheap radios. This is a Radio Shack 2125. And it's shortwave, and I have one right here. It's very small. I'm pouring water into it. I'm sure it'll work later. They're small. It's kind of amazing what they've packed into this. It has a little scan feature. I don't even have to turn the knob. I can just push the button, and it'll tune for me and try to find the next station. Whenever I get a piece of crap like this, the first thing that I like to do with it is take it apart. And so inevitably, I'll take it out of the box. I'll stare at the screws on the back for a little bit after I turn it on and give it a test drive, and then I'll Google it. And this was a particularly interesting one. When I Googled it, it turned out there was a whole community of people who were already hacking the heck out of these things. They were doing something really strange to it. They were taking this scan feature. You push a button. It goes to the nearest strong station, and you listen to that station. And if you push it again, it'll go to the next strong station, and you listen to that station. There's all these hacks published all over the web for this and a whole bunch of different Radio Shack radios that kill the scanning system. It basically, when it gets to a strong station, it ignores it. It plays about a tenth of a second of it, and then it just goes to the next one. And it scans and scans and scans forever. Interesting. Not anything I would ever want in a radio, but there it is. And a little bit of investigation and Googling kind of led me to why somebody would want that. I'm going to play a video and kind of give you guys the rabbit hole that got me involved in this, and we'll take it from there. I might have to fuss with the audio a little bit. I apologize. I'm not sure what's going on up here. Do I have external volume up here? Or? You did. That's good. This is too quiet. Let's see what I got. You're not getting any audio. That's no fun. This is going to be a long one with no audio. Bear with me. I definitely have it in the right place. Is there volume out here?
Is it the gigabit switch?
Hold the mic up to the speakers. That adds a whole new level to this. I like that. I really like that. I'll do that. Wow, that's fabulous. Can you guys hear that? That's awesome. Of course. I touched the laptop in the video. There's not much to look at anyway. I'll talk over a little bit and kind of narrate it to give you a sense of what's going on. There are tons of these videos on YouTube right now. If you go to YouTube and you look up EVP, and EVP stands for Electronic Voice Phenomena, and it's the idea is if our spirit or personality or however you want to play this out goes beyond, you die, that potentially there may be some kind of spirit that gives you the power to manipulate electromagnetic waves, right? That's the gist of it. And so a lot of people are going to Radio Shack buying these, snipping a wire in it so it scans continuously and listening to the output of it in order to have a conversation with their it's a little hard, and I have some better examples later, and maybe we can get the audio worked out by then. Got none? If I plug in this guy. Cool, thank you. I'm sure it's very simple.
This is the only way you can talk in real life. Right.
So there's a voice in there that's the operator. The operator's asking questions.
Yeah.
And then the radio is scanning through hundreds of, theoretically hundreds of channels, and little fragments of words are coming out. And the idea is that maybe there's some kind of intelligent power that can grab the
voice in real time. We can hear you loud and clear. Keep talking.
I'm very interested in the style of it. There's something that's happening here with the culture of YouTube and Windows Movie Maker.
People being
a little afraid to make fun of ghost radios. They keep themselves pretty serious with some time. I'll talk a little more about that. Alright, let me get back on course here. This is big. I don't watch much TV, and I should have, because apparently they use these things on pop TV all the time. There's a whole group of ghost hunting shows that have been out in the last couple of years. They try to take a very scientific approach to it. And, of course, they use technology because it's scientific. And so these show up a lot, and recorders and various meters and things that can detect ghosts. This is really interesting to me. I mean, this is almost mimetic, right? This is just kind of people passing the idea over the Internet and with a little bit of instruction, hey, I'll go into my living room, I'll talk to my dead grandfather. I wanted to look into the history of this. When I started asking people online about it, it turns out that the history to EVP, to using this type of technology, is more of a mythology. And so I really wanted to crack into this and see where it came from. I can't go the whole way through it, but roughly post-Civil War, up through the 1920s, spiritualism was very big in the U.S. There were seances. There were mediums, and communicating with the dead was a pretty big part of pop culture. I haven't really determined why. I'm sure other people have at this point. At the same time, this is an interesting era in technology history, right? Some of our biggest inventions are kind of in that era. And of course, when you think about these inventors, this is Thomas Edison, they're doing something that nobody's ever seen before with a piece of equipment. And it must seem a little bit like magic. It must seem a little bit like a medium or like talking to ghosts. So what's the difference, right? One of the pieces of mythology I found was really interesting was people had decided that Thomas Edison was, later in his life, building a telephone to talk to the dead, right? And I found this fabulous little quote out of Scientific American. He says, "I've been thinking for some time of a machine or apparatus which could operate by personalities which have passed on to another existence or sphere." And the whole community just holds this up. Like, this has been around forever. There have been people working on radios to talk to the dead since the beginning of radio, since the beginning of electricity. Later on in the same article, he says, I don't claim that our personalities pass on to another existence. I don't claim anything because I don't know anything about the subject, which kind of tells me that probably the reporter, the guy who was asking him the questions, wanted to know what he thought about this thing that was all over pop media at the time. Tesla gets called out for this all the time. Marconi gets called out for this all the time. I firmly believe that these guys, when they were getting into the beginnings of radio, were hearing signals that they could not explain. And they probably sounded a lot like voices, and they may have even been voices, and they may have even been voices from other people trying to invent radio at the same time. I really believe that. I could not find any evidence that Tesla or Marconi believed that there were dead people using radios or using radio signals. The funniest thing I found was that Tesla came out at one point saying he thought they were coming from Mars, which to me is a little more believable, too. 1920s came about. For some reason, the spiritualism in our culture kind of, it didn't end, but it flaked out a little bit. This is Harry Houdini. And again, I couldn't pinpoint one reason that caused that, but I thought he was kind of interesting. Very popular figure at the time, magician, escape artist. And apparently early in his career, when you couldn't make a buck as a musician, he was a medium, right? So you can kind of guess the truth behind that. He went on later in his career he got a lot of joy out of taking the press to seances or taking sometimes the police to seances and debunking them so it would get all over the newspaper. Really interesting end to his career. And I think in the late 1920s, I think we were probably ready for that. I'll whip through some of this history. I know I got a late start here. As often happens in technology history, we skip over the Great Depression because nobody was spending money on consumer electronics or consumer technology. And we skip over World War II because there was only one entity spending a lot of money on these technologies. And we'll just jump past all that. This guy here is Friedrich Jurgensen. I'm going to try to play some clips of his, and a lot of these characters I bring up speak German. If you know German and I'm missing the point of something, please hit me up later. I'd like to find out more about it. Jurgensen was a Swedish filmmaker. They consider him the father of EVP, the first person to really stumble into this. Apparently, so his story goes, or so the way he tells the story, is he was making a film and he wanted to record birds chirping for the soundtrack in the film. So he goes off to his summer home or wherever and off into the fields and takes a tape recorder, an analog tape recorder, and starts recording birds. And when he plays them back, he thinks he hears his name. When I talked about apophenia in the beginning, I talked about the clouds, and I think we all do that. We all can kind of see images where images don't happen. There's an audio version of apophenia, and I think probably everybody's experienced it. You're pounding away at an important email, you're typing something, and you hear your phone ring. And you check your phone, and it didn't ring. Anybody experienced that before? Or somebody in the other room called your name, and then you finish what you're doing, and you say, what? And they're like, what? I didn't call you, right? I was camping many years ago down in Georgia, and there was this little bird that I swear was going, cheeseburger, cheeseburger, right? And anybody who lives south of the Mason-Dixon knows this bird. It's like Carolina Wren, the cheeseburger bird, right? So we have this audio version of this. So I firmly believe he heard his name on these tapes, right? He got a little obsessed with it, and he taped and taped and taped and taped. And he started listening not to what he was taping, but what was in between what he was taping. And he'd take the bits of silence that was in between sounds, audio sounds, and he'd re-record them to another tape player so he could amplify them. And then he'd take that one and amplify it again and so forth. And now he's listening to little pieces of static that sounded an awful lot like people talking, right? So much so he wrote a book about it, right? This one's Voice Transmissions with the Deceased. The English version, I think, was published in 81. There might have been an earlier version of that. This is a pretty big deal. I want to play a little piece of this so you can get a sense of what these voices sound like so you can hear, you know, maybe what you heard. I'm going to miss the date of this one. You can hit me up later for it. There was a German documentary called Last Gate to Eternity that was about him as the father of EVP. I have no idea what he's saying, but I can guesstimate from hearing other tapes like this in English. And it gives you a sense of what he heard and what he got so excited about.
Ich mache es nochmal. Das ist Deutsch. Horch der Radio.
We have Dovino. It's in Italienisch. Also sehen Sie, dieses Gemisch ist ein Beweis, dass kein Rundfunk solche Sendungen geben kann. Noch einmal. Noch einmal. Gut. Noch einmal vielleicht. Naja.
It's pretty typical in EVP culture, two things you'll hear over and over throughout the rest of my demos. People firmly believe that you can't naturally hear these voices and that you have to learn a skill to hear them, to hear what they're saying, right? And so the two things that happen a lot is people like to, one, slow them down, and two, repeat them over and over and over, put them in a loop, right? And if you hear anything 15 times, I think you'll start to hear something else in there.
Or not.
I'll jump forward a little bit. This is another character in this kind of long history, Konstantin Radive. He's Latvian. I'm sure I'm punishing that name badly. Radive. He encountered Jurgensen's book, was really interested in it. He was He was a psychologist, Latvian psychologist. I think what he was most interested in was how serious the guy was about it, right? He firmly believed that underneath it, the guy might be a skeptic, and that he really believed he experienced this. So he went to meet him and have an EVP session with him, and they did a session, and he couldn't hear anything. He could not hear these voices, right? And they talked and talked and talked, and he still really believed in this, or believed that Jurgensen believed in it. And so he started thinking about ways to extract the audio out of the signal so that you're only left with that other noise that we're trying to get to, right? And he published a series of circuits for other people to start experimenting with this. This is three different circuits. They get referred to nowadays as the Rodive diode receiver. They're fairly interesting. I'll jump up here for a second. The gist of it is there is an antenna that receives this electromagnetic energy that spirits are controlling. It gets processed into audio by this diode. It goes through a little tuning circuit, or in the case of these, an untuning circuit. I'll talk about that in a minute. And then pumps out to the tape recorder. Now, one of the things I thought that was interesting about Jurgensen that Radiv didn't pick up on is he thought it was possible that the tape recorder itself might be acting as a radio receiver, right? You get some kind of harmonics in there, and you get a signal, like you hear the stories about radio and you're filling, that kind of idea. So this may be the receiver, or they may have been using really good or bad tape recorders to do this. Radio people are probably already laughing about this. The circuit on the right is a crystal radio. This is a very early history of radio, a non-powered radio receiver. No batteries. This is cool stuff, right? And radio waves that come from a radio transmitter that I intentionally broadcast, a radio signal, come into the antenna, get tuned through that coil-looking thing and capacitor, and get converted to audio and dumped out to some headphones or to an amplifier or something like that. Boy, they look suspiciously similar to each other. And I think deep underneath it all, and especially later in his career, I think he realized that he reinvented the radio. Right? To talk to the dead, but the radio. Interestingly, I did some formulas to kind of figure out what frequencies the original designs were on, and they're all over the map. The most common one is well below the AM band, where we don't really do much down there. Supposedly in World War II, they transmitted to submarines and things like that. VLF. Submarines? They still, that's interesting. Got ya. Like all these guys, he published a book. Something to that. This one, it came with a floppy record in the back. I'm going to play a little piece of that. How am I doing on time? And am I...
Yeah,
I'll play a little bit. Play faster, I know. I'm such a storyteller, I'm sorry. I'll play a little piece of this.
German and Latvian.
So many times we hear about to hear.
Terribly bad. A voice later identified as that of a man who lived and died in a place called Kirnbach in the Black Forest, Germany, says, "Wartet auf Walter von Kirnbach."
Starting to really sound like voice. And they might have been.
German. "Wait for Walter from Kirnbach." A voice called
later on
James
in this disc,
Joyce.
Winston Churchill makes a speech. Not that he would be on the radio. Just the same signal. One of the things that happened around this time that I find pretty interesting is people started to get criticism about the radio connection. And what I've read over and over is that people believe that was actually a good thing, right? And that this extra noise helps us define missing parts and information that we can't quite hear. This is referred to in other sciences as stochastic resonance, where you add noise into a data set to be able to get the data to be more apparent, right? That book came out in 1971, or it went to English in 1971, and not coincidentally, this gentleman, William O'Neill, he was a radio amateur, he was an electronics repairman, he did radio in the Navy before that. He started using a shortwave single sideband receiver, a special shortwave receiver that he could communicate with the dead. Now, he would talk out loud, and then the dead would radio to him, right? He had a little help designing the system that he's using. This is a picture of one of the iterations of it right here. And he was helped by this man. This is George Mueller. George Mueller worked for NASA, right? So this must have been pretty important stuff. The only real catch being George Mueller died 4 years earlier. And apparently O'Neill could already talk to the dead before the radio business came about. They were just telling him how to make it so other people could hear them, right? This makes sense. There's this guy who kind of helped him out with it. He discovered him. This gentleman is George Meek. George Meek was the president of something called MetaScience Foundation. And he went and he did research and experiments with O'Neill for many years. In 1978, he published a manual so other people could start doing it. This has diagrams. This tells you what radios to use. It gives a lot of explanation of maybe the spiritual side of it. It gives a lot of just documentation of interviews they had with dead people. I think my favorite, I'm sorry, this is one of the receivers they use. This is the last one called the Mark IV. And probably the most well-known one out of the batch, and probably looks familiar to the radio people again. One of the things I found most interesting about this was the copyright notice. The copyright notice said there's no copyright. What it said is, Meek says, I believe there are these layers to the astral plane that you go to when you die. And if you're the type of person who's going to rip off the technology and not give credit, you're going to get stuck in the red one. This is one of the best copyright pages I've ever seen. The Spiritcom manual is online. I think I might start using it for my work. This is a diagram of how the Mark IV works. This is pretty interesting. It starts with the tone generator, makes a sine wave, like a carrier wave, and then broadcasts it into the room through a transmitter, 1 foot. And then they receive it 1 foot later through a radio receiver. And then they broadcast it out to a speaker. Very possibly the spirits could modulate the radio waves, or they could modulate the sound in the room. So it went into the room where the operator, O'Neill, could hear it, and then it gets picked up by a mic, put on a tape recorder, and given to the world as evidence. Right? Okay. I'm going to play a piece of this real quick. I'm going to play a couple short clips back to back so you can hear what this one sounded like. This was released with the Spiritcom book at a press conference. Another guy in this story, of course. Oh, yeah, and they made a book out of it, right? There's another guy, let me pull this up real quick, Stephen Rourke. Art Bell fans may recognize that name. He's one of the people who collected evidence. I think he just collected evidence. I don't think he had an opinion on how the U.S. hoaxed the moon landing. He didn't really believe in the Spiritcom, and he did a lot of research on the Spiritcom to figure out, what was really going on here. He found out a couple things. There were documents, videotapes of O'Neill. This was at the end of one of the tapes. It turns out O'Neill was a practiced ventriloquist and was really good at having conversations with himself. There was some other evidence to that. He also noticed that O'Neill never had he never faced the camera. He always had his back to the camera. Yes, I'm talking to the dead over here. Never mind me. Right? He also thought that O'Neill might have owned this thing called an electrolarynx. And some of you may recognize the sound already, right? So if you have damage to your vocal cords, you can hold this up and it will vibrate for you. And let me pull up a couple more audio pieces. This is kind of interesting. This is work found better quality tapes in the archive.
If you'll excuse me, sir, I wish I could stay here all night and all day every day, but I do have to get some rest, and I'm very tired. And if you have no objection, sir, I'd like to go to bed and get some rest.
Very well, William. Why don't you hear that? Go to bed and get your rest.
Okay, doctor. Well, I'll go ahead and shut.
Yeah. Later on, Fate Magazine, kind of ghost spooky magazine, hired a guy to see if he could
now,
do the same sounds.
Now, I'm going to read a brief passage for you. With the electrolarynx held in front of my lip.
I don't know if I completely trust all of Rourke's research, but that's kind of interesting right there. He had some other things that he dredged up. He thought that George Meek here was in cahoots with O'Neill, that this was all faked. Jim McDonald of McDonald Douglas was pouring $50,000 into this project. The Spiritcoms, you could buy one for $10,000. So there was a lot of money to be had in here in through the 70s, which is kind of interesting. He also thought that Meek was in cahoots with... the Department of Justice, the CIA, the FBI. I don't know why any of those organizations would want ghosts to talk to us, but he believed it, and he filed for a Freedom of Information Act, and they actually had records on the guy, so there's something out there. I've never seen any of the product results of that. That guy I've shown you already. I'll try to go a little faster here. Klaus Schreiber, 1985. Retired guy, last four years of his life, he discovered that he could bend spoons. He got into Jurgensen recording a little bit. He heard voices. One of the voices he heard said, Klaus, we're working on television. So he decided he better get a TV camera and start figuring out how to receive. A lot of these folks believe that spirits on the other side were scientists and were building gizmos to talk to us. They really believed it, and he a couple times mentions things like a TV station on the other side, right? This is a great system he worked out here. This is, from his notes, a camera pointing at a TV. The signal from the camera goes through a converter box to the TV it's pointing at. This is called video feedback from the 60s, from the gloves at the heydays, right? And then when it was done, they would take the tape out of there, and they would move it over here, play it on another TV, point the camera at that one, and play it one frame at a time, really slow. TV's normally 30 frames per second. This is one frame per second. So you can see what's going on in slow motion. Pretty cool. This diagram also has an ultraviolet light and a roll of tin foil, which has been chosen to mark on, I don't know why, I don't know what it's used for, I'm still kind of researching that one. What's that? Hacks! I hadn't thought of that. And it worked. He got an image of his daughter, his deceased daughter, who theoretically this thing didn't receive TV signals. This is kind of the same way I feel about the radio, but I'll just say that because that's what he says. This is a movie star, Austrian actress Romy Schneider. There'd never be a movie star on TV, but anybody recognize him?
No, but I was going to make a discount this
on TV. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, the Nipkow disc. It did. It does. You're right. Albert Einstein, theoretically. This is the King Ludwig II of Bavaria. I don't know why he'd be on TV. I'm going to bypass these. I think those images are pretty strong. There are some samples you can find on the Internet of these coming into actualization. I'll move forward to about 1995, 2000. This is a guy named Frank Sumption. Might be pronouncing that wrong. Frank, are you in the room? still alive, I got to ask. He's a radio amateur. He got interested in this pop electronics article from 1995 where you could build your own ghost receiver. And tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock, I'm giving a workshop to do that. I've modified it so you can attach it to your iPhone or Android phone and see if the Hotel Pennsylvania is haunted. Anytime 4 to 7, I'll be down there doing that. It's based off of the circuit. He built one of these, and it didn't work. And he threw it on a shelf, and that was the end of that. 5 years later, he started thinking about it again. He hopped around the Internet. He found some software called EVP Maker. It's free. You can download it. What it does is it records audio coming in. It slices it into a million pieces, and then the ghosts, the spirits, can reorder them to save things. Right? So it's this idea of pulling random bits, coming back again, and reordering them intelligently. And he went about building a radio. These get called Frank's boxes. He's built almost 200 of them. They're pretty interesting. I have a diagram of one of them, though the diagram has changed with each one. You're going to recognize some things from what I've shown earlier. The part that's different is there's a sweep generator here, or a randomizer, that's making the radio tune all over the dial really quickly. Right? Then that goes to the tube, to the receiver. The receiver receives real radio signals, not ghost signals, real ones, in tiny little tenth of a second fraction. And then, for some reason, he thought we should fit that onto a speaker into an empty space and record it again, just in case the ghosts were doing their thing with sound waves. And then he amplifies it and he records it. Pretty straightforward. A little pricey, as you could guess, but he's made, again, over 100 of them, almost 200. He sells them. There's a little bit of a collector cachet to it. He also helped kind of organize the online activity that's going on right now. There's a community doing this. And there's some forums out there that you can hop on. You can talk to Frank. This is Steve Holte. I'm probably butchering that one, too. Steve, are you out there? Gotta ask. They could be here. Steve is the guy who figured out how to do the same thing with a $20 Radio Shack. And this just catapulted it, right? Oh, how am I on time?
I think that we just closed it up until, so if you want to
wrap it up. Okay. He sells some radios. I'll play one or two of these. You guys can type EVP into YouTube. But just to give you a sense of what else is out there.
And are you doing your performance immediately after this?
I'm going to try. I got to run to the fourth floor and grab some equipment. I have a bunch of this equipment. I'm going to set it loose down where you come up from the escalator into the mezzanine for about an hour, we talked about, and see what happens. I'm going to use Schreiber's video feedback. I have a resonance producer that shoots some static in there. I have a new one, which I didn't get a chance to talk about. This is a fairly new idea where random electromagnetic energy collected on an untuned antenna goes to a tiny voice processor and spits out a computer voice.
What does it feel like to be in heaven?
I'm sorry, what's that? Yeah. I agree with you so much, I'm not even going to answer. Yeah, you are absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I could say that about Ohio, too. I mean, there's a lot going on out there.
Is it beautiful?
It's so serious. Everybody hear that? Yeah. The recorder's name is Raven. Everybody hears their name the first time. I've noticed this in all these videos. Everybody hears their name.
Hello.
And what you're witnessing here is they're adding technology on top of it. I can't quite hear the voice from the spirits. So I'm going to run it into an audio editor and clean it up until it sounds like the voice I heard. That's the new thing that's going on. And so you'll see a lot of these, when you do this on YouTube, you'll see a lot of these spectrograms, these audio signals up here. I ran myself out. Sample audio from these machines for the next hour down in the mezzanine. workshop from 4 to 7. You can build your own. I have about 30 kits, iPhone, Android tested on. I have a laptop version if you want to do that instead. About $12 for these little kits. Take maybe 20 minutes to make. And I'm just going to let people play with them for a few hours and hang out. That's tomorrow from 4 to 7, after the keynote and all that. Questions? I may not have any answers. I'm still learning. Yeah?
Have the spirits ever spoken to you?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask that. Honestly, I did more LSD than Timothy Leary when I was young. I don't think I can give you an honest answer. I don't believe that. But I sometimes hear stuff, yeah. But I don't believe they're talking to me. Was that the other question? Yeah. That's a very good point. This community uses each other as the reality check. I don't know if I trust that one either, but it's unfortunately it's all empirical, and that's, you know, what you see is what you get. So all you can do is really have somebody else look at it. The science is a little loose. I should mention that though. That was interesting. Visualization of waterfalls. If you guys want to Google something called ITC Bridge, there's a thing that's been out there since 2008 called the Stream. Somebody has detuned a radio between stations, put it in a shed in their backyard, put a microphone in the shed, ran a wire to their house, ran it through a spectrograph visualizer, and threw it up on Ustream, and it's been around the clock. And he says he doesn't want people to listen for voices in there, and man, it sounds like voices. He wants you to look at the spectrogram because he thinks that the spirits are learning to photograph themselves. And so you're supposed to look for their faces in it. Another interesting use of this. That's it. We're done. Thanks, guys. If you have more questions, I'll be out there.
I should ask, is there anybody officially emceeing this floor right now in the spare room? No? Okay. Join Will on the side.